How many of you are tired of sitting in meetings? Well, I want to tell you a story about a nun in a convent, and maybe it'll make you feel better. Sister Maria entered this particular convent where the rules were that they could only say two words every 5 years. So her first 5 years finished, and she was called into the Mother Superior's office, and the Mother Superior said, "Well, Sister Maria, do you have anything to say for yourself?" And she said, "Room cold." So she was dismissed and went back to her cell, and 5 years later, she was called in, and the Mother Superior asked her what she had to say, and she said, "Bed hard." So 5 more years went by, and she was called in, and she said, after she was asked what she had to say, "Food bad." And 5 more years went by. This makes 20, in case you lost track. And she came in. The Mother Superior said, "Do you have anything to say, Sister Maria?" And Sister Maria said, "I quit." And the Mother Superior said, "Well, it's about time. All you've been doing around here is complaining." So if you have any complaints, just think of Sister Maria. I think these three sessions that we're going to have together are going to be... or hopefully they should be very stimulating. You received this first term objectives for missionaries, and I'd like to read this together briefly. And I think these came out of the Evangelical Quarterly, and I think they sum up very well what we as the navigators would have in mind as first term objectives for our new people going out. One, a good foundation in the language. Two, satisfactory adjustment to the climate. Customs, culture, and people on the field. And there's always some kind of traumatic adjustment for people coming out to the field on their first term. And we found that in this staff trainee experiment that this adjustment often comes at the end of their first year. Number three, a thorough working knowledge of the mission. And you might add there and the personnel on the field, already on the field. Four, an understanding of the field, its problems, demands, and potential. Five, some awareness of his gifts and his place in the work. This will come even in the midst of language study. And then six, a deepening confirmation of his call as a result of a growing sense of belonging and consciousness of being useful. So I'd like to take these as six basic first-term objectives that you can be thinking about, and which I believe the other material that we will present to you in three sessions will help you to understand better. Now, the next memo that you've received is one that went out from me to about 70 people on the field or who have been on the field or who have perspective regarding living on the field. And I was thrilled at the response. There were probably 45 to 50 who returned this form with some real wonderful information that we have been working on. I'd like you to skip down to Roman numeral 2. Please list below with some comment the three greatest problems that you or other navigator missionaries have encountered in your first term on the foreign field. What could have been done to avoid these problems before coming to the field? And Bob Hopkins has correlated this material, and you've also received that. Don't look at it right now, but he'll be covering this material this morning. And he's done an excellent job in categorizing these problems. And then tomorrow, we're going to Roman numeral 1. Please list the five most important qualities that a missionary should have. And I'd like you to fill in under that, right under, directly under the statement, two things. One, five essentials for the life. And then five essentials for the ministry. I felt as I received these returns that they broke down into these two categories. Five essentials for the life and five essentials for the ministry. And that's what we'll be covering tomorrow. And then Thursday afternoon is Roman numeral 3. What is the wife's greatest problem or problems during the first term of service? And how can we better prepare her for encountering this? Or can we? And I've asked my own wife, Jean, to correlate this material along with her own experiences, and she's going to present this to us on Thursday afternoon. And then we're going to have, following each of these sessions, the latter part of each of these 3 1.5-hour sessions, three panels. Today's panel and tomorrow's will be Rob Powery Smith. He's been working very hard on learning the American language in order to participate. And George Sanchez, Hoppy, and myself. That's today and tomorrow. And then Thursday afternoon, it will be all women. Florine Sanchez, Lori Hopkins, can she do that, Bon? And Doris Stevens, she'll be able to do that, okay? And my wife. So we think that this should be stimulating. Now, as we go along through these sessions, you're welcome to write anything in these blank spaces, questions that you want to bring up to the panels or comments, whatever you, and also try to figure out, say between now and tomorrow, I'm not assigning this to you, but it would be very stimulating if you would take the time to try to figure out what you think those five essentials for the life and five essentials for the ministry should be, and see how close or far apart we come tomorrow. And then on Roman numeral 3, try to figure out what you think the wife's greatest problem is. And I think you'll be in for a surprise there, at least on part of that. Okay, Bob.
Oh, Bob, regarding the part for the women on Thursday, I think you meant that the women were the ones leading the group, but the men should also come to attend, shouldn't they? You want them here, too. It's not a whole women's session, but we're going to sit back and learn some things. This morning's topic, of course, is problems of first-term service, and I think you have your outlines, and we've tried to make them so that you can actually fill in comments between the points on the outline. And it's always, I think, an advantage that we have in speaking to NAV groups on this subject of foreign service, because we found that we don't have to coax and beg and try to plead with navigators to get out to the field. We find, on the contrary, that most of you are chafing at the bit to get out there, or many of you are, and I know that some of you are headed for the field this summer, and others, Lord willing, perhaps in the future. And so we trust that these sessions will not only be theoretically interesting to you, but of real practical value, because you may be facing these things before you realize it. And we've broken this part down in three sections: personal adjustments, ministry adjustments, and orientation to the field. And we'll begin on page one there with personal adjustments. And these personal adjustments are largely a matter of our attitudes. And the reason we bring these up now is so that, if possible, we can anticipate these problems, these adjustments we'll have to face, and we'll get the proper attitudes before we even get out there. And if we can do this, we'll surely save ourselves and others and the work perhaps a lot of difficulties. Point A, adjustment to the culture and the people. Now, as these questionnaires came in and we compiled the problems, there were three that stood out and were perhaps equally representative, the most prominent. And this is one of the three: the adjustment to the culture and to the people. Point one under that, the way they do things. Now, they do things differently. You can be sure of that. But you've heard this before, and it's very true. Just because someone does something differently does not mean that it's wrong. And we have to learn this. We know this, but we actually have to learn this. And we should sincerely try to understand and appreciate the culture and the way people do things. Because you'll see so many things that very naturally grate against you and seem to be backwards to you, there will be a tendency perhaps to fight it. Don't fight the culture. If you do, you're going to get ulcers, because you're not going to change the situation really anyway, and it's best to adapt to it. I can remember when I first got to Germany, for instance, and by the way, most of my illustrations will, by the very nature of the case, be from Germany and Europe, but in principle, I think they'll apply to other fields as well. I remember the Germans have a way of tipping in order to get decent service. You don't tip because you got good service. You tip in order to get it. Well, this just went against me. I just refused, and it kind of bothered me. Well, finally, I realized, no use fighting them. You might as well join them and relax. This is just one little example. It's different than the way we're used to doing it. And I think we should try to identify with them in our dress as much as possible. And for you wives, the way you cook. Now, you won't go completely, as it were, native, but try to adapt as much as you can in cooking their way, acting their way. For instance, you don't go out walking in Germany with your hands in your pockets like Americans do. You just don't do that. Walk the way they do, and so forth. And I know some of our missionaries will come home, and sometimes they'll be wearing glasses that look a little strange, and maybe pants that are a little different cut, and shoes that are a little different shape. And we shouldn't think too strangely about this, because actually, when you give yourself to a people for a number of years, you adapt part of their way and their cultures. And sometimes the accent comes out a little differently than you would expect. But this is all part of giving yourself to a people. And of course, here's a definite requirement: don't criticize the country and the people. And this is sometimes hard not to do. But again, I think we should get this settled before we even leave the States. This is especially hard or easy to fall into when we're with other Americans, even our own staff. You kind of let down your hair, and it's easy to criticize the way they do things. Or around the table at home. Now, if you've got children, this is the wrong thing to do, because they pick this stuff up, little criticisms. Or sometimes Americans will go out to a restaurant, you know, and then we let our hair down and start talking. And we don't think others can hear or can understand. They can understand often a lot more English than you think they can. For instance, just this last trip in Germany, I was in the sauna, you know, getting some relaxation, and I was stretched out, and here were a couple of Germans talking. One had just been to the States, and he was talking about the States. Well, it so happened in this case, mostly what he said was positive. But he probably thought, you know, nobody understood what he was, no American was around to understand, because, you know, you can't tell an American in a sauna. So, but I understood. And this happens often in restaurants or other places. And, you know, even if something is obviously wrong or backwards about the way they do things, you may let them criticize it, but you dare not. And they might on occasion. I remember a real man of God, T.J. Bach. He was the director of the Scandinavian Alliance Mission, now Evangelical Alliance Mission, for many years. He was born and came in Denmark and came to the States as a young boy and found Christ here. Well, he made many trips back to Denmark. And when he was there, he stayed with some friends of ours very often. And the spiritual situation in Denmark was not too encouraging. But you know, they said to me, of all the times that Dr. Bach was in our home, he never, ever said one critical thing about Denmark. And they remembered him for this, a very godly man. We should adapt to their culture, but don't go overboard either. Because if we go overboard, we become mentally bound by their own weaknesses. Isn't that right, Rob? This is your statement, Rob, and it's very true. You know, I think God had something in mind when he gave us the commission to go into other countries. Because a foreigner, if he has a humble spirit and is, of course, led by the Spirit of God, has a definite advantage in many ways over the people themselves. You have some definite advantages coming to our country, Rob, than we do. You can see things from an entirely different perspective, and you can be of help to us. And we can be of help to others in their country if we have a humble spirit about it. I know one person who went to the field, and he wanted to be like this particular nationality. He just wanted to be so bad that he wanted to change his name. And so forth. And a good friend of mine who was a national in this country, he kind of laughed and he said, "You can't. He says, you're an American. You can't become one of us. You can adapt to us, but you can't." And so we don't want to go overboard. But our attitude will determine, I think, you know, really whether we're accepted or not. And I think all we have to do is look into the New Testament and see the example of the Lord Jesus. He was the great missionary. He left heaven's glory and came down to this earth. Now, he had a lot of critical remarks to make about the religious situation, but I don't think we noticed that he said anything regarding the culture, the way they did things. He didn't criticize. And I'm sure many things must have grated against his own nature. But he loved, he adapted. And this is, of course, an example for us. Now, Americans, I think, tend to feel that the way we do things is the best way. It's the right way. And we tend to give a superior feeling to people. It may be a shock to some of you to know that most other peoples in the world don't feel that the way we do things is superior. They don't think we have anything superior, except perhaps in technology. And this is why a lot of other countries want our help in technology, but they don't want our help in any other way. I remember the first couple of terms over in Germany, there was this attitude because, you see, Germany had just recovered from the war, and here was tired old Europe. And Americans, we helped them a lot, and we were young, a young nation. And they said, "Well, you Americans, you know, you're like children. You have a lot of vitality and so forth." And they said, "You know, we like children. Everybody likes children. But you don't place much confidence in children." And they didn't place much confidence in our political views, our religious views. You know, see, all they had learned really from America was, or mostly from Hollywood and this type of thing. They liked us, but they didn't put confidence in us. Now, of course, this has changed. And the picture, the image that they get today is not necessarily of naive children. It's another picture entirely. I remember one time a German pastor who was given the assignment to make a film strip series with tape for Billy Graham and his work in Germany. And then he asked me if I would translate this and put it into German, into English, the sound tape. And I said I would. And I had to stay up a couple of nights pretty late. I was quite busy to do it. And I got it into the deadline to him. I saw him a few weeks later, and he said, "You know, Mr. Hopkins," he said, "you're the first American that has ever kept his word with me." "Oh," he said, "no," he said, "I like Americans." He said, "I really do. Because my brother," he said, "went to the States, and he's a pastor in a German church over here. I work a lot with Americans over here in Germany," but he said, "you know, you can't tell Americans anything. They'll always do it the way they want to anyway." This was his experience. And I'm afraid it's all too often true. But we can learn from these people and their cultures. They've been around a lot longer than we have, and not everything they do is wrong. Well, this brings actually up to light this problem of anti-Americanism, and it is not decreasing. For instance, in Sweden, this was the most pro-American country in Europe at one time, at least when I first was up there administering. I remember our 6th Fleet, you know, down in the Mediterranean. I used to come to port in Italy and France, and boy, the fellows would get fleeced all the time. They took a tour, went up to Sweden, and pulled into Gothenburg. And the Swedes were so happy to see Americans up there that they gave them free streetcar rides, free zoo, free everything. They rolled the red carpet out for Americans. That situation in just a few years has changed so that Sweden is now one of the most anti-American countries in Western Europe. It can change quickly. Now, I think we should have a very mature attitude toward our nationality. Now, this doesn't mean that we have to be ashamed of the fact that we're Americans. You are. You can't help it. And it'll probably at first be quite obvious when you go overseas by the way you're bearing and the way you talk and walk and so forth. But we don't want to display this unduly. And I remember there have been times when I have been glad that I was not readily identified as an American. I could give you an example. I'll just give you one. I remember I was coming on the plane one time to Dusseldorf, up in the Ruhr one night, and there were some Americans on this plane, and they'd been drinking and loud and carousing. And I remember one middle-aged woman, she was kind of tipsy, and she said to the steward, she looked out, she said, "Darling, what little town is this we're coming into?" And here was the capital of the Ruhr, you know, city of about 1 million. And I mean, I just, you know, crawl up my seat like this. And if you've ever read the book Ugly American, it wouldn't hurt you to do this if you're going to some parts of the world especially. But unfortunately, this is the image too often given. I think we should learn to accept graciously anti-American remarks and inferences, because they're going to come. Rightly or wrongly, that's not the question. We shouldn't carry a chip on our shoulder, and when somebody says something that's anti-American, you know, they got a fight on their hands. We don't have to defend everything the United States does. You see, if we had their background and saw things from their vantage point, we would very likely come to the similar conclusions. But we see things from a different background and from a different vantage point. Try to understand each other. And we are not out to represent the United States. We're out to represent the kingdom of God. We should remember that. I think that everyone can have their view on politics, political things, but it's best to be very careful how we express these, or if we do. And keep our relationships with nationals on a personal, spiritual basis. And two things in closing this part. I think we need to learn to distinguish, and this was brought out in the questionnaires, between what is American and what is scriptural. What is an American way of doing things, and what is scriptural? And another thing to distinguish what is a scriptural essential and what is a scriptural non-essential that might be related to a culture. For instance, these subjects, you know, of smoking, drinking, makeup, and these things. Are these essentials, or are they scriptural non-essentials related to culture? Well, you go to Germany, and you know they drink their beer just like we drink Coca-Cola as well. You better, if you have a problem, you may not. But if you do, you're going to have to adjust to it. doesn't mean that you have to necessarily accept all our standards. You have to understand this is not a scriptural essential. Nowhere in the Bible says that you can't drink beer, you know. So let's get our essentials and non-essentials straight. Point two, adjustment to the language. Now, this was another one of the top three problems mentioned in these questionnaires. Get the language well. This is a must, and almost at all cost. Well, not at all cost, of course, at the cost of our spiritual walk with the Lord, but it is a must. The language is a key to the heart and the soul of a people. We'll never understand their thinking until we understand their language, because you can go into another culture and you can be given the very same set of facts and you'll come up with different conclusions because your way of thinking is different and it's related to their whole culture and their language. And scriptural truth is transmitted primarily with the language of the heart, which is the mother tongue. There are few people that are truly bilingual. George is one. He's been reared with both languages. But unless you've been reared from a child with both languages, you may speak a second language well, but it is usually a language of the mind and not of the heart. The mother tongue is the language that communicates to the heart and communicates spiritual truth. And so we have to know their language to communicate these things. This is what we're dealing with on a spiritual level primarily. And the people in your country to which you go will usually tolerate you for a year or two. Your efforts, your stumbling around in their language, they're very tolerant. But if you've been around for several years and still do not speak their language acceptably, they ask themselves, are you really interested in us or are you interested in something else? Are you interested in a ministry or are you really interested in us? If you're interested in us, you'll learn our language. And so this is a must. And of course, we can get tips on language study. I know, for instance, in Germany, it does little good. I mean, I don't say it does no good, but it's little use to try to do preparation in the language here in America. We have terrific schools over there that really teach you the language. Now, unfortunately, they didn't have those schools when I first went over, but they do now. Other countries may be different, but find these things out. I'd say the first year or two, use as little English as you can. Now, you may like Time Magazine or Newsweek or whatever it is, but I would say the first year or two, forget it. Read their magazines if possible. Listen to their radios. Now, after you're over the hump in the language, fine. It may be a very good thing to keep the tie into what's going on back home. Subscribe to Time or one of these others. But the first years, you'll be defeating your own purpose if you try to keep up on both. You almost have to bury yourself in one or in the language. Now, this, of course, is much harder if you have a family, a wife and children. Now, the wife isn't too bad, but children especially. It's hard to concentrate only in the one language, but you've got to do the best you can. And so the first term is usually concentrating on the language, on the culture. Now, you'll never learn the culture, the language perfectly. But the thing is, have you learned it to the place where you feel comfortable in it? You're not self-conscious all the time that you're making mistakes, because if you are, this will hinder you in the ministry. Point three, adjustments to the climate. Actually, there's not too much to be said here. It depends on, of course, the country, the area to which you're going. Like in Europe, the climate is not a problem, at least northern Europe, although the weather can have a psychological effect sometimes. I can remember when I first went over, I arrived in the 1st of October, and I hardly saw the sun until spring. And I came directly from California, and this was depressing on me the first year until you adjust to it. But some countries in the Orient, like the heat, they say just saps your energy and your strength. You have to realize this. Some countries, they take their midday siesta, you know. Even in southern Europe, they do this. There's a reason for it. And we should learn to pace ourselves, I think, in these various climates. Point four, adjustment to the standard of living. Again, this will vary from country to country. If it's a developed country or like northern Europe, or if it's an emerging country, your more underdeveloped areas, it'll be different. But I would say this, in almost every country, it will take you longer to live, to do business, to prepare meals than it does right here. This is true in Europe. It'll take you longer. I don't know about Britain. I'm talking about Europe, the continent. I really don't know about Britain, but it is true. And there are reasons for it, which we don't have time to go into. The buying habits and all of this enter into it. It's just going to take you longer to live. You know, in Americans, and I think especially navigators, we're very efficiency conscious. So we want to do things better and faster, quicker. But you know, efficiency is not a top-rated virtue in most countries. It really isn't. This is our culture, our makeup. I remember just before I went to Germany, Hans Wilhelm, German background, who was reared in China, came to the States, and he was helping us in the office, and I was given the responsibility of kind of breaking him in the supply department and so forth. And Hans would be doing something, and somebody would come by, "Here, Hans, I'll show you a quicker way to do this." And he'd be doing something, "Hans, here, I'll show you how you can do that faster, better." Pretty soon, Hans threw up his hand and said, "I don't want to do it faster or better, you know?" This wasn't in his culture. I mean, why always wanting to do it faster and better? This is our culture, but it's not everybody's culture. So learn to live with it. And then the inefficiency in red tape. We think we have it here, and we do, and it's probably increasing, but cheer up. It's going to get worse, because some of these places, the red tape is really something again. But don't fight it. Adjust to it. I could give you examples, I won't take the time to do, that are just, you know, from our standpoint, are just stupid and unnecessary. It'll take you half a day to go do something. But I used to fight it, it'd churn inside. Well, then I realized you can't change it, so I take along some work to do. You know, if you can't lick them, join them. But adjust to it. On the other hand, we must learn to use our time wisely, because it's easy to waste time on the field. Just living, repairing things, puttering around. And so we have to continually rework our schedules and our priorities and study management of time and so forth. All right, point B on page 2, and we better move along now. That was the main point. I think we won't go in depth on these others. Adjustment to fellow workers. This was a number 4 problem. Workers, both American and national staff. And this brings personality conflicts into question. You know that most mission boards of the world, this is their number 1 problem. Personnel problems, personality problems. If our questionnaires are any indication, I thank the Lord this is not our number 1 problem, but it still is a problem. It was number 4 on the list, I believe. Well, see, in the States, you were probably, before you left for the field, or leave for the field, you're in an area where you are responsible primarily, you are calling the strokes. Well, you get over there, and now, after your language study, you're, by the very nature of things, going to be placed under someone else in most cases, unless you're pioneering a new field. Also, you will probably be working in closer proximity to other staff geographically to start with. And this can create some problems where you may have been kind of calling your own strokes back here. All right. Are we going to adjust? And this is a heart problem that we have to get settled. I was just reviewing some verses in Romans this morning, and, of course, Romans 12:18 stood out again. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, or the Revised says, so far as it depends upon you. You know, it always takes 2 to have a conflict with somebody. Live peaceably with all men. That's Romans 12:18. And let's remember that before we are navigators, we are brothers and sisters in Christ, and we're going to have to spend eternity together, so let's, you know, try to get on with it down here. Point 2. A lack of communication among staff on the field. You know, each is taken up with his own thing, his own responsibilities, and he's kind of over his head, and often the communication gets a little weak among the staff on the field themselves. And then often when we do get together, it's discussing ministry. But we need times just to relax and fellowship in the Lord, around the Word, pray together, have recreation times together. This is so necessary on the field. This was mentioned by several in their questionnaires that this has been lacking. All right, point C, adjustments in your own life. 1, emotional adjustments. Now, this was, again, one of the top 3, emotional adjustments. Some of the biggest personal problems are for the first term are discouragement, loneliness, frustrations. These are the big problems of the first term. You see, often when you first go to the field, you're separated from the other staff at first because of language study. You go away to study somewhere. You're out on your own. You're not with others who, with whom you feel you can share your heart, who understand, who see things the way you do. The culture, the climate may tend to be depressing. And of course, Satan knows this, and he'll use every trick in the book to try to get us discouraged, because then we become ineffective. And so this almost invariably happens, and it'll probably happen to you to one degree or another, but being prepared, or forewarned, you'd be prepared. One good defense against this is being sure of God's personal calling to the field. In other words, has God called you there, or did the organization send you only? Now, if you have a definite conviction on God's calling, this is going to help you over these periods of discouragement. Two, physical and social adjustments. Probably more than ever, we need some physical exercise, physical outlet, because you'll be buried probably in language school to start with. This is a mental exercise. And we're so intent on getting this that we neglect. I know I have done this over there. Neglect physical exercise. Or times of relaxation, just recreation. And we found, I know in Europe, the need for regular vacations. And Doug has been pretty strict and strong on this, on the different staff. Getting a definite vacation. When do you plan your vacation? And how long are you taking? And so forth. Now, your program here may have enough variety coming back to staff conferences where you relax like this, you know, and all, that you don't need vacations. But over there, you're going to need them. Well, just like here. And sometimes you need to watch the diet, too, especially for single people. I remember when I first went out, of course, I was living on a shoestring at the time, but the diet was pretty starchy, and, you know, I kind of blew up the first term here, and I had to work it down. But you can watch your diet. Three, adjustments in your spiritual life. I would say in most cases, going overseas, not all, but in most cases, you'll be going into Satan's territory in a way that is not probably true here at home, although I think it's increasingly becoming true. Where you have less gospel light in these areas, you have more demonic influence in some of these areas. Satan has a stronghold there, and you can expect his attacks. And we need to be strong in the word and prayer, even when we're not actively engaged in the ministry. And in language school, you see, we're not engaged in the ministry as such. And okay, it's easy to have your regular Bible study, prayer times, when it's part of the ministry. There's the group that's doing it. But these first few years, couple of years, you may not be doing it with any group. Are these convictions that will stand up? And often isolation and loneliness open us up for personal temptation and sin. And I think we need to have doctrinal convictions before we go. I know on these questionnaires, a couple wrote and said they ran into doctrinal errors on the field they never even knew existed. Certain types of doctrines that are not scriptural. And often discouragement opens us up for non-scriptural emphases of one kind or another. This has happened in our past history. Persons get discouraged. Here comes someone along with a pat answer, you know, and you open yourself up if you're not careful. Four, adjustments in your family life. Often, of course, this is kind of typical of we in the Navigator work, I guess, but on the move. You're often on the move. But before leaving for the field, you're on deputation, moving a lot with the family. You get over to your new country, you go to language study out on your own. Then you get back, you try to find a house or apartment. You might have to rent something that's only temporary. These things are very hard, especially on the family. And we have to realize this. And children's schooling can be a problem. Now, in some cases, they can go to American or English schools or send their children away, like Randy Bates is going to be sent clear to Malaysia. And this is not easy. Others of us have sent our children right to the national schools, depending on the situation. This also presents certain problems. Sometimes they're subjected to anti-biblical philosophies and morals and this type of thing that we don't like. But foreign service seems to be hardest on the children in the family. Now, these little kids are very resilient, and we thank God that they are, and they bounce back in a wonderful way, usually. But they're subjected to two languages, two cultures, all at once. We had to learn them one at a time, and that was hard enough, you know, but they got two coming at once. And as I say, most children adjust to it, and I think because of it, they're better off in the long run. But not every child has the emotional stability to adjust to it, and it's very hard on some. And so we must realize this. And I think, of course, we should take very seriously, not only for the states, but for overseas, the helps that George has been giving us these days on husband-wife relations and the family. If they're necessary here, I think they're even more necessary over there. All right, page 3.2, ministry adjustments. A, comparing with ministry in the states. Now, in one sense, this is very natural that we would compare with our ministry in the states because this is all we've known. But one, the ministry overseas will be different. So expect it. You know, you go from one division or one region to another in the States, and often your ministry is different. How much more will it be over there? Somebody wrote back, and this came from one of our nationals on the staff. Try to forget how you did it back home. Don't forget what you learned in the ministry, but the how. And don't say, well, this is how we did it back in Illinois or wherever it might be. Because the national, he doesn't understand this. He can't relate to Illinois. And the ministry, of course, will be different because of the mentality, the culture, and all of these things. Lifestyles are different. For instance, when I went back this time, I'll say this about Gordy Strom. Gordy is a fellow who really hits it. He's got a lot of drive, and he would always hit it early in the morning. He'd be up real early before we left. I went back now. He's not getting up so early because they're having students over all the time. The lifestyle of the German students is to hang around till 11:30 or 12 every night. Well, he tried it for a while, but you can't burn the candle at both ends. You've got to adjust and change your lifestyle. So he just doesn't get up as early as he used to. You have to adjust. Point two, the pace of the ministry will probably be slower on the field. Not as frantic, go-go as maybe you've had in the States. Vedano's found this. They had to adjust to it, but they found it a real blessing, they said. This is due to many factors. It's due to your culture, it's due to your climate maybe, but it's also due in part to the development of the ministry in that country. Perhaps it's in the initial stages. There's just not going to be as much to do in the way of activity. And, of course, we don't want to become lazy, but there may be less activity. We may get more done, you know, with less activity sometimes. At least we'll have more time to think. That doesn't hurt us. But the pace of the ministry probably will be a little slower. Three, don't criticize and tell them how it should be done. You know, some arrive on the field, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and fire in their eyes and a pocket of promises, and they're really going to show people how to do the job over there. Well, this is good to have some conviction and some enthusiasm. Some have been known to, after being on the field just a very short time, a few weeks, to write home quite lengthy reports and telling all that was wrong with the situation there. Now, I don't think this type of thing sets too well with any leadership, whether you're 100% right or not. It's just not the way to go about it. And, you know, even if your analysis were right, you shouldn't criticize. But chances are, you wait a year or two and you find your analysis probably wasn't as right as you thought it was when you first got there. But we have some things to learn from you. And we don't want to just squelch everything, but, you know, have a learner's attitude. That's point four. Keep your eyes and ears open, and try to keep your mouth shut if you can at first, on criticism especially. Ask a lot of questions, but don't jump to conclusions too quickly. Pray about things before making suggestions in a critical nature. And then be sure what suggestions you do make are based on scriptural principle and not the way we did it back home, but it's based on scriptural principle. All right, point B, administration problems. And this is kind of in the line of paperwork. We can wrap this one up in a hurry, I think. Finances, reports, and correspondence. Now, finances. In the States, I am told or I understand that you, of course, you have budgets, but you more or less operate with what comes in. It varies from month to month. When you go overseas, you raise a budget, and usually this comes in fairly consistently. Now, this can vary too. But I know one couple wrote that it was a new experience for them to have pretty much the same amount coming in every month, so they had to really budget their finances, which in the area was more operated out of necessity, you know, what they had and what the needs were. The wheel that does the squeaking gets the grease, you know, and wherever the need was, that's where it went more. But on the field, you may have to budget your finances a little more definitely because they're there. And some feel they didn't have enough experience in this area. All right, the matter of reports. Now, you have to send in reports, I'm sure, here, but you may have to send in a couple of more overseas. I don't know. This is all part of the game. It's part of knowing what's going on and evaluation. But, you know, this gets at some people. They just hate reports. But, again, it's a matter of attitude. Adjust to it. Write it into your schedule. Maybe set aside a half a day at the end of the month or whenever and just, okay, this is given to getting my reports, finances and whatnot. And try to be prompt in getting them in. Three, correspondence. Keeping up personal correspondence and thank you letters, this is a real burden to a lot of missionaries, especially, I'm thinking in the area of the thank yous, because some of us have many, many people giving to us. Maybe $5 and you've got 40 or 50 people to kind of thank. Well, this is good that you have this many people interested in you. It gets good prayer support. But it does present a considerable burden of responsibility. But again, adjust to it and plan for it. Write it into your schedule. Some write personal notes. Some write a form letter and jot just a little personal note on the end of it. However you do it. I don't think people have to hear every month. But I think they would like to hear regularly, whether it's every 2 months or, say, at most every 3 months. But keep it regular. Now, some have mentioned, a couple mentioned, a problem of finances or losing financial support while on the field. Now, this happens occasionally, and it's a problem. But there's one couple that mentioned it, by the way. I know they were low, and some years ago we started giving to them. And you know, we gave at least 10 months before we even got the first acknowledgement from this couple. And that gave me a little insight as to maybe why they have this problem. They're just not informing their people. So, keep the correspondence up and especially thank yous. But one secret of a successful ministry, I think, is to latch on to a few people who are real prayer warriors and keep them informed. And this is find some of these widows or somebody, you know, that God has laid on their heart a prayer burden and they spend time. This is a tremendous thing for your ministry. Get them praying for you. And then keep these people informed by all means. All right? C on page 4. We're on the last page and I have about 2 minutes here. The pressures of the ministry. I'll just sum these up quickly. One, the first term is usually characterized by relatively little fruit. You come from a thriving ministry in the States, perhaps, and you go over there and language and all of this, and this can be discouraging. But many, I know at least in Europe, are thinking in terms of first term, no ministry responsibility. Now, we're not living up to that in all cases. This doesn't mean you don't do any ministry. But it means that your main responsibility is language and cultural adjustment. Now, you minister, but it's in somebody else's ministry. You don't take a responsibility to develop an area your first term. We're working toward that. For instance, Bud Seckler had 1 year of language study. Millers came home. He was given the area ministry. Well, this was unfair to him. He was struggling to express himself. Sometimes it's necessary, I guess, to do this, but we're trying to work and not doing it. Recognize your own gifts. This can take down the pressures, whether real or imagined. In other words, know where you fit. Maybe you're not best working out on your own. Maybe you're best working with someone. And work this out with your regional directors and so forth. 3, have convictions about the NAV-type ministry. Making disciples and disciple makers is not the only way to minister, but it's the way God has called us. And be sure God has given you this call. And especially as in the developing stages of a work. Everything militates against this because, like Lauren expressed, you haven't demonstrated yet when the work is first starting. Once you get over that hump of demonstration, then things go easier. But in those early years, until it's demonstrated, it can go pretty rough. But you should have peace in your heart that God has sent you over, and not just an organization, too. Okay, 3, the last point, and we'll just quickly mention here, orientation to the field. Most mission boards spend 3 to 6 months in orientation schools, candidate schools. I don't think we need that much in the NAVs, but I personally feel we need more attention to orientation than most of our people are getting. Most of them, I think we rush them out to the field too soon, but I don't know if we can work on that or not. We'll try to. A, the leadership needs to know you, your background and experience, and your gifts, and your vision, what's really on your heart, and these things. Your area or divisional man may know you pretty well, but his headquarters. B, you need to know the leadership. In other words, if we want a spirit of a family here, we need to have more than just names. We need to know each other. This is, of course, part of the institute here, that you know what the leadership's vision is and methods and policies and so forth. C, you need to know your future country and its people, its history and culture and customs and manners. A lot of things are different. And I would like to see us compile from these different countries just things such as manners. And I could give you a lot of examples from Germany. Just, for instance, like walking with a girl or your wife down the street. You don't go on the street side. You keep her on the right, no matter what. You don't help women to the table with their chairs over there. Now, you may do that in your home and so forth, but the German, they don't do it. I remember I was over there single, and there was one Christian worker, a lady actually, she wasn't a girl, but we went out to eat to talk about a ministry in a particular city, and so there were the table with 2 chairs at the restaurant. I went to help her, and she thought I wanted her chair, so she went over there. I went over here to help her. I gave up, you know. This was before I knew the score. Chased around the table twice. A lot of these things, you know, if we had these compiled, you could know this and save that embarrassment that I went through. D, you need to know your future co-workers. Try to know your people on the field, national as well as American, as well as possible. And then E, you need to know general trends in modern thought. And I'm very happy that Dean's going to be having this session this afternoon. I'm just sorry that there's an optional here and a choice between that and this group work, but this is the beauty of having husband and wife. You can break up and share both. But I think this is very important. And some of these books, I see one of Dr. Schaefer's books here on the God who is there and so forth. We need to be up on these things, and especially like in Germany, and philosophy and theology. I say anybody going to Germany, they better know a little something about Karl Barth and Boltzmann and what these men believe in theology, because these are figures that influence the thinking over there a lot. Well, these are just some of the areas that and some of the problems that we have in the field. And Bob, I went over 5 minutes, or 4 minutes, sorry.